it's not quite correct to say that he is the body, or he has the body, or he is in the body. Incorrect, but equally unwise to say that because he is enlightened, the body would operate on a different basis now.
If he wanted to
attain his freedom from the bondage to the body, why would you want the body to act in a particular way?
Wait.
Get that clearly. When he started on, he was confined to the body. His consciousness was confined to the body. His consciousness was limited to the body. His consciousness was imprisoned in the body, as it were. When he had the personality, he thought, this is my personality. I am the Swami. I am this, I am that, etc., etc. That is the imprisoned consciousness. And realizing that that imprisonment was the source of all his sorrow, he practiced yoga and he attained liberation from this confinement to the body consciousness. When he has broken, once he has broken that shell, why will he ever, even a chicken does not do it, my dear. Once the chicken has come out of the eggshell, broken out of it, I don't think it ever looks back, my God, it's broken, let you put it all back together. Doesn't do that. So, you think that what even a chicken does not do, a sage is going to do it?
Yeah, no, obviously
not. That's it. So, he is not interested at all. Let the body take its own course. It has an inherent life force. It has an inherent intelligence. It has now, not me. It has an inherent life force. It has an inherent intelligence. Let it take care of itself. As long as it wants to last, let it last. Let it take care of itself. The eye does not promote its sorrow, nor fight it.
That assumption, on the level of which you're talking now, the tiger is divine grace.
Right, correct, absolutely correct. The time for the end of this termination of this body has come, and that's it. Absolutely right. But he is not, the sage as such, he is not even concerned about that. Mm-hmm. It's all these arguments, pro and con, occur only to the observers, spectators.
What about health and medications and those, what we were talking about at lunch,
yeah, right.
How does this apply?
Quite simply, very simply. If the body undergoes the change called ill health or sickness, the same, if you had followed our battle, it becomes clear. If your body undergoes a change called illness for various reasons, because you're re-exposed or it is, there are two agencies also created by God's own intelligence. If God is omnipresent intelligence, omnipresent omniscience, in God's own world, two agencies have been created. One, these people, the doctors and the nurses, and the pharmacists, they come and look after that body, the sick body. If that doesn't work, there are the undertakers and the priests and so on. They come in, they do their job. All of which are to an enlightened person, the grace of God.
How does the body then take care of itself?
Body takes care of itself. After all, ask her. If the body is sick, can you pump health into it? No.
Her?
Mm-hmm.
No, well, I agree.
So, the body looks after itself. But on account of certain changes that take place in the world, of which the body is part, it's possible that the body decays, it's possible that the body is subjected to certain accidents, and the body is able to look after itself, and one of the symptoms of the body is looking after itself is disease.
Yeah.
And in a certain condition, just as hunger is a disease, and when that disease manifests itself, somebody gives me some food. Pain is a disease, and when that condition manifests itself, somebody else gives me something else which is called medicine. Same thing.
But are there other ways to get rid of the pain?
What comes along is good.
Yeah.
Whatever way comes along, it's good.
There's a place for the faith healing too to take it.
Whatever comes along is good. What is it that says, no, I am a very highly spiritually evolved person, I won't be, handled by these nurses, I would want God to heal me.
No, I don't think that's the...
You have not met such people?
Oh, yes, I have.
Thank you.
That is what I was talking about.
Why don't you say that this is God come to help me out of this situation?
I guess God has many forms.
All forms? Yeah. I've seen this. It makes sense to them. It's logical from their point of view, I guess. She says, you are sick, Swami, can I rub your back? No. I don't believe in all this. I believe in God and... What is this God going to do now? God sent her.
And she had the choice.
God sent her, no choice.
You have the choice of whether you want your back rubbed or not. That's what I know.
I'm not sure.
Swamiji.
When the back begins to ache, the remedy comes along. Then the arrogance says, no, I want that. Not necessarily.
No.
I mean, if it is possible, it's possible. Why not? What's wrong with that? Mm-hmm.
What does one do if I'm sick or in pain and there are many choices? Say there's three nurses that come. One has a pill, one has a tonic, and the other one says pass. It's my choice. I mean, there's many things coming my way. It's still my choice, is it not?
Naturally. Very good. So you look around and see which is most suitable to you. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, same thing. All of them are...
All of them are useful. Could be right.
As long as I don't... even if I die, I won't be touched by this person. That is arrogance.
So again, it's that inner intelligence, that shows me
correct.
The balance, like
correct.
My walking
correct.
Step.
Correct. It is the arrogance that judges. It's the inner intelligence that sees. Isn't there a difference between the two? Something which says, which judges. And something which merely sees it. You go into the kitchen and there is a salad and there is something else, some kind of couple of soups. You don't have to say, oh no. I don't want that. There is some arrogance in it. Instead, you look at that and you look at this. If you look without judging at all, absolutely without judging, you will see that suddenly when you look at that, it says, come, come, come.
It chooses you.
Thank you. It's simple.
Complete letting go is having none of it be important.
Marvelous. Supreme. That is supreme. That is called samam. In Right, you got it. Got it now. If at that time you quickly look within yourself, there is a beautiful calm. You are not excited about making a choice, about accepting this and rejecting this and valuing this and nothing at all. It's absolutely calm, and yet you are making a choice from the point of view of others. From my point of view, from the point of view of the onlookers or the spectators, you are making a choice. But within yourself, you are not making any choice. You are merely looking at it. And there are several types of fruits and you pick up one. There again, it is one of the most beautiful expressions in the Bible. Judge not. We have completely, totally ignored it. One can live very happily and, in a way, in a manner of speaking, making choices, decisions all the time, without judging. You have several things in front of you, look at them, pick up one and go away. In order to put it in a different style, in India they have a saying and a superstition that on every grain of rice is written the name of the man who is going to eat it. That's all. When you go into the kitchen, you just look on which bears your name, and whatever bears your name, pick it up and go. And there is another beautiful expression in Urdu, in Hindi. Nadi nav samyog. A pilgrim is walking and suddenly he finds that his path is obstructed by a river. Bewildered, he looks around, there is a boat waiting. Whatever be the power or the intelligence that put the river on his path, also has provided a boat there. There is an obstruction, there is a help. When you find an obstruction on this path, you find also an aid, a help. When there is a disease, there is a doctor, there is a nurse. In that one, without forming serious judgments, one can find, relate oneself to life and to what is around oneself and keep going. Simple and beautiful. Then the mind is in a state of calmness. Sameness, not only calmness, sameness. Between this soup and that soup, there is no judging, but you take one. Your name is written there. Not because I like it, not because I hate it. People who don't smoke and people who don't drink and people, vegetarians and so on, they usually complain that they have a rough time in society because they have to move with people who smoke and they have to move with people who drink and they have to move with people who eat meat. What do I do? I find no problem at all. I also deal with people mostly who smoke, who drink. Who may even say, Swami, what about a smoke or a cigarette or a drink? Don't tell them anything. Say, it doesn't suit me. Doesn't suit me. Yeah, leave me alone. If you start a big, philosophizing there, what a horrible thing this tobacco is, what a terrible thing this liquor is, then you are provoking them to retaliate. Yeah, doesn't it? My name is not written on it. There are millions of things in this world which I don't, on which my name is not written. This is one of those. Then you can keep your friends, keep the most atrocious friends, and keep going. Quite pleasant. You can even, strange, this looks non-fanatical approach, isn't it? Doesn't it? Huh? Mm. But such a person can even accommodate fanaticism. If he is a fanatic, non-smoker, he is also my friend. Another fanatic smoker. Who says that this is the best thing, unless you smoke some pot or something like that, you cannot meditate. He's also my friend. Is it possible then that I become a hypocrite? Possible. I don't deny the possibility. But then I look at all these diverse and almost contradictory phenomena. Is it true that God dwells in all that? What do you think? Is it true that God dwells in all that? And if this God is omnipresent and omniscient and omnipotent, why doesn't He do something about it?
It's nothing to do anything about.
Why? He hasn't appointed me as Viceroy. But then I look at him, the fanatic alcoholic, who says alcohol is essential for health or for this or for that. The same God who says that from within. It doesn't suit me, right? Again, I'm not going to say that because he says and because I think he is God, I must jump in on his bandwagon. No. Can you not at the same time look within and see if the ego starts judging? He is right, he is wrong. There is God in him, but the devil is prompting him to say this. All that. If you avoid all that, the mind is in a state of absolute calm. In all situations. And therefore first comes titiksha and then comes samadhana. Samadhana is samadhi. It's a state of perfect equilibrium. Perfect equilibrium. And that perfect equilibrium is possible only when there is linking with the cosmic whole and therefore non-judging. To use a word which might contradict the first, non-discrimination. And when you see samadhana, the sixth of the virtues, as non-discrimination, The first viveka becomes something else. It's not discrimination. It is discrimination between the real and the unreal. Not discrimination between what is right and what is wrong. That's a bit tricky. That's clear, isn't it? Discrimination between the between right and wrong is a very dangerous concept. Because then all that I hate, I'll conclude to be wrong. And all that I love is supposed to be right. It's a discrimination between what is real and what is not real. What is permanent and what is impermanent. The impermanent being unreal, and the permanent being the reality. Even in the alcoholic or a murderer, the murderer-ness is temporary, but something else is permanent. So that which is temporary is unreal. I don't have to take any notice of it. That which is permanent is there. The consciousness, the intelligence, the life force, the energy, they are there. It's simple.
On that level, charity beginning at home, taken to its ultimate meaning. You don't have to run around taking care of all the ills of the world. Because you would automatically be attracted.
Right, correct, correct, correct. I object to the usual sense in which that charity begins at home is used. Charity begins at home means do charity at home first, not to the home. Let charity begin in your home. You do charity and then preach it to others. That is what they meant. Not doing charity to your husband and wife and children. Yes, you are right. You're right. The person who seeks for opportunities of good works is probably an egotist also. And there's a beautiful story told of Rama. Are you familiar with Ramayana? Right. Rama had lost his wife. Somebody abducted her. And there was some devotee called Hanuman who made it possible for Sita to be restored to her husband, or Rama to regain his wife. And it is said that finally, before leaving, parting, when he had been enthroned, when he had been restored to his kingdom, Rama looks at his devoted servant Hanuman and says, you know, for what you have done to me, I should serve you again and again and again in several births to come. But I don't want to offer that boon to you, because when I say I must serve you, I am condemning you to a position of being in need. How can I repay the debt I owe you? Means, may you be born as a very poor beggar so that I can do some charity on you. He says, I understand that that can be a curse, and so I withhold the boon from you. Why should I want to help anybody at all? When I want to help somebody, it means I want people to suffer. Why shouldn't I pray, may I never be needed in this world? May no one ever need my services in this world. But having said that, I am not anxious to be of service. There's no anxiety to be of service. As you go along the road, you find enough, plenty of opportunities. The day-to-day living itself, where some little help may be called for, do it and get, go on. That's the best thing. There's an extraordinary situation in Malaya once. I had gone to visit a sort of carnival, and some kind of celebrity who was in charge, who was some chairman or something of an orphanage, showed me her stall in this festival. And as he was coming down, she said, "Swami, man, pray for our work." I was tickled. I don't know if I made fun, made it obvious that it was fun, but probably I was serious, because I didn't want to. I looked at her and said, "What would you like me to pray for?" "We pray that our work may prosper." And I said, "Sorry." When I said sorry, she was taken aback. "Well, what does he mean by this?" Then I said, "This is an orphanage. Why should I pray that your work must prosper? Which means, may there be more and more orphans in the world. Why shouldn't I pray that let it be closed tomorrow morning? May there be no orphans at all."
Om Asato Ma Sadgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityor Ma Murtam Gamaya Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
I have listened to about half the tape. Very good. I suppose we have to send a note or something with it.